Today we'll do the last verse, and then I'll explain a little bit the sankalpa vakya, or the last, you know, the closing verse that we use with every chapter. So we'll finish that. Kshetra kshetrajna yorevam antaram jnana chakshusha bhuta prakriti mokshancha ye vidurianti te param. Yeah, this is the Sanskrit chanting. When there is a cha, then they use na, mokshan. Otherwise, it is moksham. That's the correct pronunciation. But that's what I learned from Swami Brahmanandaji. So that's what we teach the children in the chanting class. So it says, kshetra, kshetrajna, yor, evam. Evam means evam, thus. So the Lord is summarizing. Kshetra, kshetrajna, yor. So between the kshetra and the kshetrajna. So field and the knower of the field. Antaram. Antaram means the difference or the distinction. How do I know that? Jnana chakshusha. By the eye of wisdom. So by the eye of wisdom, I know the distinction between the field and the knower of the field. I or whoever. And then what happens to such people, those who can distinguish between the field and the knower of the field? Bhuta prakriti moksham. What happens to them? Cha means, and they go beyond the prakriti, the bondage of prakriti, bhuta prakriti of this world. They get liberated. Moksham, they get moksham. And then ye, and these people who know that, vidu, ones who knows that, the wise people, the realized souls, the masters, yanti, they reach, they param, they reach the highest. So here the Lord is summarizing, because in the third verse he says, kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata, kshetra kshetrajna yor jnanam yattat jnanam matam mama. He says, I am the knower in all the field, and kshetra kshetrajna yor jnanam, and one who knows that, that alone is the knowledge, in my opinion. Matam mama. Krishna says that the knowledge is the knowledge of field and knower of the field. That is the only important knowledge to be known. And so here he is summarizing. He says, now iti, evam, thus I have explained to you in detail, in 35 verses, the distinction between the field and the knower of the field. And you know it with your eye of wisdom. And once you know it, you are liberated and you go to the highest. So we'll talk a little bit about the distinction between the field and the knower of the field, even though we have done it, but go again to revise. And then what is the eye of wisdom? What is liberation? And what is the highest? So four points are covered in this verse. So we'll cover all four. So as I said, the human life, Krishna says, is only fulfilled if you have this knowledge. Have it not only intellectually, but also experience it. Become one with that knowledge and bring it into your life and realize your oneness with that, the Lord, then only your life is fulfilled. Until then, your human life is incomplete. No matter how much money you acquire, how much power you have, you may become the president of the country, you may become the Secretary General of the United Nations, you may, you know, have billions like Bill Gates, you may do a lot of service, you may do a lot of good things. That's all very good. Your children may become very brilliant. You have done a great job of raising. That's very good. But even then, no matter how much service you have done, no matter how many people you have helped, no matter how good children you have, no matter how many buildings you have built, your human life is still incomplete until you realize the truth. So the idea being that the goal of my life should be self-realization, should be knowing who is the field and who is the knower of the field. Not only knowing intellectually, reading the 13th chapter, we know it. But then having that experience that the field within me is the Lord, and that is my higher nature. And my essential nature is divinity, and this body, mind, and intellect is my equipment. So I am not this body, mind, and intellect. I am that consciousness who owns this body, mind, and intellect. That has to repeatedly be brought into your thinking, into my thinking, that this body, mind, and intellect is not me. So my life here is not just to take care of this body, just to take care of my emotional needs, to take care of my intellectual needs, but to take care of my spiritual needs. And one who knows it, only that person has done his life's job. Whatever you came to do on this earth, you have done it. Until then, you have to keep taking birth, punarapi jananam, punarapi marnam, again and again go through the mother's womb, and again go through that diaper, you know, toilet training and diapers and, you know, ABCD, and get beaten by your teacher and all that, whatever, you know, you have go through all that again and again. Your parents will slap you, everything will happen until you realize. So that's what he says, one who knows it, he alone, his life is fulfilled. And antaram, and how do I know? It says jnana chakshu is the eye of wisdom. So we have two kinds of eyes. One is the eyes I can see with. You know, I can see all the objects. But this subtle truth that of knowing who I really am can only be known by the eye of wisdom. And for that, I need the spiritual literature. I need to go to a guru. Like Swami Chinmayananda, we all read his commentary. So go to a guru, approach him with humility, and learn from the teacher so that your inner ear of wisdom may open, the inner eye of wisdom opens when you have acquired the truth. And they say this Ajna Chakra is where the eye of wisdom resides. That's why in Shivji, if you see Shivji, he has this third eye. The idea being that his third eye is already, he is open. You know, he already has it, but of course he keeps it closed. And then the myth is that when he opens that eye, then the whole universe gets destroyed. And the pralaya happens, and then the universe starts all over again. So the way I understand is that when your eye of wisdom opens, eye does not mean that you have to have a third eye, but when the wisdom dawns upon you, then this world ends. For a wise person, he does not see the world. He just sees the one everywhere. He sees that oneness. For him, there is no world. He says the Lord alone is in all. You know, he sees that one consciousness in everybody. And he says everybody is God. Everybody is divine. They are all me. I am them. There is actually a film song which I was listening to. It's very beautiful. It's from one of the newer films. It says, Tujhme Rab Dikhta Hai, Yara Main Kya Karu. So he says, it. Of course, that he's telling his beloved. He says, I see the Lord in you. What can I do? But we should say, I not only see the Lord in my beloved, I see them in everybody. I see them in my husband, my wife, my children, my neighbor, my boss, even my brother-in-law. I keep making fun. Actually, my brother-in-laws are very nice. I get along well with them, but I just make a joke. So don't go and tell Neeru that I was making fun of her brother. But the point is that you say, I see the Lord in all. Anybody you see, and he says, Sajde sir jhukta hai, yara main kya karu. So anybody you see, if you see the Lord, then what do? You bow your head. So the idea being that one should see the divinity in all. And then only, you can say that your eye of wisdom has opened. Because for a wise person, there is no world. He only sees the one God, and that is me. So he sees the oneness in all. So that is called Jnana Chakshu. And Swami Chinmayanandaji says that for that, you need your head and heart both to be involved. It's called the subtle intellect. It's not the obvious intellect that we have. knows mathematics. I know 2 plus 2 is 4. I know, you know, A, you know, the square of the hypotenuse is the square of the other two sides. So the gross intellect knows the gross world of objects, but the subtle intellect knows the inner world of the Lord. And that is called Gyan Chakshu, and that happens when the head and the heart are both involved. That's why they say that in spirituality, you not only have to get your brain involved. You know, some people say, I'm a, you know, jnani and I have knowledge. I don't need to do all this prayer and these murtis are useless and, you know, we should just destroy them all. Don't need to go to the temple. No, the love for God is as important as knowledge of God. So, and then of course somebody may be more intellectual and may want to study more and maybe doesn't go to the temple that often, but he loves God in his heart and just prays. Another person says, no, I have to go to the temple. And if that's your, you know, wish, that is wonderful, but it should not make you a fanatic. You should see God everywhere, not only in the temple, but he's also there in everywhere. And that is the wisdom. So that is, and when the mind and the heart both are involved, the intellect and the mind are together involved, then the knowledge becomes faster. So that's why they say you need a subtle intellect and you have to put your mind and your heart both in that, involved in that. Then you develop this subtle intellect called intuition, called eye of wisdom, through which, and that's why when I see Lord Shiva, I always, you know, ask him that, may I get that eye of wisdom. And that's why we put tilak, and even the girls, you know, they put the bindi or the tilak on the forehead, signifying that I am stimulating that third eye of wisdom. And when you see Swamiji's, they all put tilak. The idea is that it is, you are reminding yourself that there is the third eye of wisdom which I need to open. So there is an importance or symbolism in that. And then it says bhuta prakriti moksham. And that person becomes liberated from the bondage of prakriti. So they say, Swamiji, in America, you don't need to bring this knowledge. Why? Because everybody is free. You know, women are free, slaves are free, blacks are free, Mexicans, everybody is free. So why do we need, we are all liberated. So Swami Chinmayananda says, the liberation is not the freedom to vote, or that you are not in jail. So the Gita is not meant to free you from jail, because we are not in a physical jail. Freedom is the bondage that we have with our body, mind and intellect, because we are so caught up constantly in just doing things for the body, acquiring more, possessing more, wanting more, you know, accumulating more. And then more and more relationships, more friendships, more this, more, you know, for the mind, I want mental joy, you know, oh, this gives me happiness. So I go to watch movies or eat or have fun or travel. I mean, not that there is anything wrong in fulfilling the body's and the mind needs, but just constantly only spending time in that, you know, do I need more saris? If there are saris in my house that I haven't worn in a year or 2 years, why do I need more saris or more jewelry? Why do I need a bigger car or a bigger house or more money? You know, why am I doing all that? You know, if I have enough where I'm comfortable, let me spend extra time in spiritual pursuit. Similarly, running after mental joys and pleasures, you know, this gives me happiness, that gives me happiness. Find happiness in the Lord. Turn this, whatever time you save in from these physical and mental pursuits, turn it towards spirituality. Whatever resources you have, turn them for that. And then intellectually, you know, we want to read more, acquire more, and put the internet constantly. You know, you're just wasting your time. Spend some time in reading good books. So that is what they say. So that is liberation, where I am no longer now bound by my bodily desires, by my mental desires, by my intellectual desires, because we are imprisoned within this prison of this body, mind and intellect. So that is the liberation, that is the freedom. Where if you look at the wise person, he has, you know, simplified his life. He's now he takes care of the minimum what is required for himself. The rest of the time he devotes to society. Look at Gandhiji, what he wears. I was talking about Guruji, Swami Tejomayananda. He's the head of the whole mission worldwide. And if you see his suitcase, he has just three pairs of clothes. And he has his, you know, toiletry kit and a watch, and that's it. And a book, you know, whatever that he... So this is how, you know, they do not spend time in their physical pursuits, So that is called liberation, where I am no longer dependent on the body, mind and intellect to give me joy, because I have found the higher joy in the Lord. And they, these wise people, they come out of the bondage of this BMI. Swamiji in his commentary gives a beautiful example. He says, just as a chicken which is in the egg, or a bird, not a chicken, but a bird that can fly. Now, it is caught in the egg, right? And then the mother is sitting and telling the bird, come out, come out. The bird said, I am so comfortable in this egg. I don't want to come out. I'm happy here. The mother says, come out, because once you come out, break this egg and come out, you can fly. You know, you can fly high above the clouds. And he says, no, no, no. How do I know after I come out of the egg and maybe I don't have feathers? And maybe I can't fly, and then I'll fall down. The mother says, no, have faith. Or a baby, you know, that's in the womb. So again, the baby comes out so that it may experience this whole world. So similarly, we are in this egg of this BMI. We are so caught, and the Mahatma is telling us, break this egg of bondage of this body and fly free, just as the bird, when breaks the egg, can fly free and soar above the clouds. So similarly, it says the wise people, they are much higher than the rest of us. Higher means not physically. They still walk on the ground, but their mind is in that higher realm of the intellect. While you and I are still in the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, they always, that's, they say Brahma with the Brahma eva bhavati in the Upanishad. It says the knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. He becomes one with that reality. That's why, you know, we all say, Namami Chinmayam Devam Sadgurum Brahma Vidvaram. So I prostrate to Swami Chinmayananda, my Sadguru, who is the knower of Brahman. That means who has become Brahman. So you and I are caught in the egg of this world, where the wise people have broken and they have gone to the highest. So that is the goal of human birth, is to get out of this bondage, of this egg, of this world, and soar high above the clouds, just as the bird can do that. And that is true moksha. That is true liberation. Liberation does not mean the freedom to vote or the freedom to criticize the president, but the freedom to choose. It does not mean that you don't take care of the body, but you choose, okay, what are the things I will do with my body, what I will do for my emotional, for my intellectual. The ability to choose and decide what is good for me and what is not good, what they call in the Kathopanishad as Shreya and Preya. You have been studying that on Tuesday. So the ability, when there is both the choices, one is prayer, one is going to give me joy, but is not good for me. Another one is good for me, but at this moment it's not giving me immediate joy, but in the long term will. So when you have that freedom to choose, and when you exercise that freedom, then only you are free. Until then, you are bound. So liberation, the moment you hear the word moksha or liberation, a bell should strike. Okay, what does it mean? The ability to choose between the Shreya and the Preya, and to choose what is good, and for me to get out of this egg of this BMI, that is called liberation. So it should be an instant response. You say, am I liberated or not? And I have to think to myself, am I liberated or not? Or am I still caught up? And that is the goal of human birth, is to be liberated. It's beautiful. Every word of this Bhagavad Gita is so masterful, because it's the Lord himself speaking, you know, so it has to be beautiful. And he says, te vidur yanti te param, and they reach the supreme, the highest. in a lot of the Upanishads, they talk about what is the Supreme and what is my relationship with the Supreme, you know, which I can just briefly summarize. They say that there is one Supreme Consciousness. You can call it Brahman, you can call it Atman, you can call it Om, you can call it whatever. You can call it Father in Heaven, Allah, you know, doesn't matter, Krishna Consciousness, Buddha Consciousness. But that one formless, all-pervading reality, when that totality, now there is a total vastness, not the individual vastness, but the total vastness of all plants, all birds, all animals, that is called ignorance or called avidya or called maya. Now when that consciousness functions through that total maya, that it becomes Ishvara, it becomes the creator and sustainer and destroyer of the world, the Lord, the Paramatma, Bhagwan, whatever you want to call it, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, creator, sustainer, destroyer, generator. You know, God is called G-O-D, generator, organizer, destroyer. So that consciousness identified with the total vasanas or maya, functioning through that, becomes Ishvara and sustains this whole universe, creates. Functioning through that individual, it becomes that individuality, the consciousness, which is then illumining my vasanas and becomes the kshetrajna, becomes the knower of my field. So that consciousness functioning through the individual vasanas becomes the kshetrajna or the knower of the field. And the field is, of course, you know, idam shariram kaunteya kshetram itabhidhiyate. Shri Krishna says in the first verse, idam shariram, this body is the field and I am the knower of the field. So that is the relationship between Brahman, who functioning through the individual vasanas becomes the knower, the kshetrajna, the individuality, who then functions through the body. So there are three entities. One is the unconditioned consciousness, that is Brahman, that has nothing else in it. Then there is the conditioned consciousness, which we call as Ishvara, or you call as the individual knower, the kshetrajna, and then the third is the field. The field is this whole universe, or in the individual case, the individual body. So one who knows it, he goes to the highest. So, and as we said, we do, when we say know, not only know intellectually, but know as my own experience. So right now we have heard it from the Lord himself. Now we have to apply and make it part of our life. So that is the journey of this 13th chapter. Every chapter in the Bhagavad Gita ends with this particular sankalpa vakya, they call it. Om Tat Sat Iti. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Upanishatsu. Brahma Vidyayam. Yoga Shastre, Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogo Nama, Trayodasho Dhyayaha. So Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat is God's name. Om, of course, represents the totality, the reality. Tat and Sat means that. Like you say, I am that. So we think of God as I am that, but God is also this. And Sat means the existence, because everything exists. This chair exists, this table exists, this glass exists, she exists, I exist. So the existence is God. Iti, thus. Why do they use this sankalpa vakya? They say that in the, nowadays, of course, we have textbooks. So they say chapter number 1, chapter number 13. You know, it's written in the book, but in the olden days, they didn't have written books. So everything was memorized. And the students used to have the entire Bhagavad Gita memorized, the Upanishads memorized, the Brahma Sutras. Everything was in their head. And that's why they had very subtle intellects. And they you know, they stayed in the forest away from the worldly distractions, so that their mind was totally tuned with the teacher, and the teacher would repeat and they would pick it up just like that. In fact, Tapovan Maharaj, Swami Chidmayananda's teacher, had a point of never repeating anything. He said, I'm going to tell you once, and if you don't get it, you can get out. He would say, and Swami Chidmayananda had to be very attentive because the teacher was very tough. And then, of course, they were living in the Himalayas with the Gangaji, you know, flowing, and the Lord there. And so, you know, you are in that subtle environment. So these students used to listen to the teacher, and everything was memorized. Now, how would the teacher tell them that one chapter has ended and the second chapter has begun? With this, Om Tat Sat Iti. Iti means thus. Om Tat Sat Iti. So the chapter has ended. And what is it? Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. So Bhagavad Gita, of course, is the text we are covering. They said it's Srimad. It is very, it's a very respectful way. It is just like saying the Holy Bible. You know how we don't throw the Gita, or we don't step on it. Why? Because it is disrespectful. So we respect Gita as the mother. That's why they say Mother Gita. In fact, even in the Sankalpa Vakya, it says, you know, I prostrate to Mother Gita, who has given me this knowledge of this Upanishads. So Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishadsu. It is in the Upanishad. What it means is that the knowledge of the Upanishad is summarized in the Gita. And how did the word Upanishad come? Upanishad. Shat means sit. Upa means near. And ni means below. So the idea is that this knowledge, you have to go sit near a teacher and sit below with an attitude of humility. Because from a teacher, you can only learn if you go with the idea, I don't know. Teacher, you teach me. If I go and say, I already know it. I just want to see if this Swamiji, you know, knows or not. Then you will never learn. Or if you have preconceived ideas, and this alone is right, and if anything fits my idea, it's good. Anything doesn't fit, I remove it. Then you will never learn. So the idea is you go with humility and sit near the teacher. Brahma Vidyayam, and it is the knowledge of Brahman. Brahman, the totality. And that knowledge, Brahma Vidya, which of course is the theme of all the Upanishads and the Brahma Sutras and all these difficult texts, all of them have been made simple. Ashtavakra Gita and all these difficult have been made very easy by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita, not only the ideas are very simple, even the Sanskrit is easy. The Sanskrit of the Bhagavad Gita is easy. I can also understand it. But if I try to pick up one of these Upanishads, I would have a hard time, you know, trying to figure out. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita is a very simple text, very practical. And that's why it says, Yoga Shastre. So the text, you know, the knowledge, if you have it, but if you cannot apply it, then what use is it? I have the knowledge of medicine, but I cannot take care of a patient, or I have the studied engineering, but when it comes time to build a bridge, I get confused, and that is no knowledge. So similarly, this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is so beautiful that I can apply in my life instantly from tomorrow. Like all these ideas, I can apply right away. I don't have to wait for next year or 10 years from now. So Yoga Shastra means, yoga means also that it joins me. Yoga comes from yuj, it joins me with the higher. Shastra means the knowledge. So it is a practical knowledge of life. That's why they say Gita is a manual of life. Just as when you buy a new car, you have a manual which we never read. Or you have a phone, you know, buy a phone, you have a manual. So this is a manual of life. What we do is we go through life never having read the Bhagavad Gita. Then, you know, you don't know how to use your life. So Yoga Shastre. And then it says Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade. So what they have done is, that they have made this knowledge very visual to us. Because Sri Krishna, we know, oh, he's Bhagwan. You know, we respect him. Oh, you are the Lord. He's in the main hall. He's there in Gokul and everywhere. So we bow down. And then it is the conversation with Arjun. Arjun, we have all heard of. We have all read Mahabharata. In fact, they are showing Mahabharata nowadays on TV. So So Arjuna, we know, so here it is a conversation between the teacher and the student, but it is the teacher is not an ordinary teacher, it is the Lord himself. And Arjuna is not an ordinary, even though Arjuna is like us, he's a man of the world, he's a soldier, but he is a seeker of liberation. He wants to know, that's why he goes to the Krishna and says, I am confused. Shishyasteham shadi mam tvam prapanna. He says, I am prostrated to you, O Lord, you teach me. You know, he could have gone to somebody else, but he went to the right teacher when he was confused, and he was given the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, which changed his thinking. So Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogo Nama. And what is the name of this chapter? Nama means name. Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhag. What is the distinction between the field and the knower of the field? That has been explained in this chapter, Trayo Dasho Dhyaya. Adhyaya means the chapter, Trayo Dasha means the 13th. So here ends the 13th chapter, which is the knowledge which is from the Bhagavad Gita, which has the summary of the Upanishads, which is very practical, Brahma Vidya, which I can apply in my life, which is a conversation between the student and the teacher, the Lord and Arjuna, called the 13th chapter, Kshetra, Kshetrajna Vibhag. So thus ends the 13th chapter. We always read the first verse, the idea being of the each chapter, the idea being that I should now restudy this. I should not say, okay, 13th chapter ho gaya, khatam, you know. Not like that. I have to go home and read it again. So which one do you have? This is Prakriti Arjuna Uvacha, or do you have Sri Bhagavan Uvacha? What is the first verse? Arjuna Uvacha. Because some of the editions have Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Arjuna Uvacha. Prakritim Purusham Chaiva. Kshetram Kshetrajna Mevacha. Etad veti tum icchami. Jnanam jneyam cha Keshava. Okay, next week I'll try to summarize the 13th chapter, you know, spend about 5-10 minutes, and then I have this manual of daily living. The last couple of days I was thinking, what is important for a seeker? So these are some of the ideas I came up with. Maybe you can come up with more. I would request everybody to take a picture with your cell phone and keep it, because this is something I find for me is where, not that I have all of them or I apply all of them, but this is all we should as a seeker. So I'll spend a little time talking about this. I'm also planning to do it in my Thursday class. Diana suggested that. So we'll talk about what we should do daily in our life as a spiritual seeker. So we'll spend, after doing the 13th chapter summary, because from chapter 1 to 13, what have I got? I was trying to think about it. So these are some of the ideas I came up with. It's not I came up with, it is some of them are from the Sadhan Chatushtaya, you know, Vivek, Vairagya and all that. And then some of the others that I have acquired along the way. So we'll do this in brief, and then we'll introduce the 14th chapter. The 14th chapter is now at our level. We feel comfortable because it talks about the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, what we deal with every day. It doesn't talk about God or doesn't talk about Brahman and all. It's more practical and simple, how I can purify my mind. So that is the 14th chapter. And then towards the end, in the 14th chapter, Krishna again takes us higher. So that is our program for next week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah, Harihi Om.